Well, recent events and happenings make it beneficial, if not necessary, to talk about ourselves as a body. We need to look at ourselves as a group of people, but look at ourselves as a body of people, and especially as the body of Christ. Such events as these, and I asked Sketch if I could use it, Sketch Henderson's beard. Some liked it, some didn't. He shaved it off for the sake of unity. Personally, I thought anything that covered his face was a help. The divorce and remarriage issue. In this body, there are people at both ends of the spectrum, and probably all in between, believing one thing and others believing something else. Brother Croom's book that came out this past week shows that there are at least two ways of looking at past history. This series on sharing that we've been in for the last month. Not everybody looks at it the same way. And there has been a mountain, almost, of correspondence, all of it good, all of it Christian, but showing different attitudes and reflecting different attitudes toward it. The methods of advertising our coming meeting this year has met with opposition on the part of some of the members. Some of them said, I can't take part in that kind of advertising anymore. The elders threw out a proposal of conducting a survey. They discussed it. Some were, you know, were for it. Others were against it. They threw it out. Other things, but there were different attitudes. Some people on one end of it, some on the other. The extent to which Christians should be involved in rallies, in vocal demonstrations, in perhaps even marches against pornography, against ERA, against just a host of things, the degree to which you and I ought to be involved and how visible and how vocal we ought to be in these matters. The preferences in songs that we sing. We've got people in this congregation that are very adamant about the kind of songs and that it ought to be what you'd call high church songs only. Others come from small country congregations and they have another view of it altogether. And somebody's going to say, you mean all that's in this one body? And the answer is, yep, sure is. And that's just, that's just scratching the surface. If you were to get down to other things, there'd be a multiplicity of other diversity and other attitudes in this very one body. Somebody says, well, this must be a motley crew. And it is. We are indeed a motley crew. Just look at you. But it's true that at least wherever there's activity, there's life. You know, dead bodies don't kick. Dead bodies don't twitch, unless it's rigor mortis, and then that's another story. But we do need to look at ourselves and see what it means to be a part of a body. I don't know whether the church as a whole has ever really understood what it means to be a part of a body. The thing I want to notice first with you, it means, in being a part of a body, it means diversity. You're going to be a part of a group of people, most of whom are very different from you. There's just one of you, thank the Lord. There's just one of me. And we're all different. There are no two of us that are alike. You're going to be associated in this body with a lot of people who are different from you. Now, unless you're able to handle that, then you're going to be very upset whenever someone differs with you. You're not going to be able to handle it. And you're going to feel estranged from those people that differ from you and that differ with you. And you're going to feel like you're being attacked, and you may even get to be paranoid or paranoid. You may find yourself just, not able to handle it at all. But each person in the body is different. We might as well accept it. And until you can accept it, you cannot be a functioning part of the body, really, in a constructive way. There are three scriptures that we're going to speak to, or that speak to us in this matter. I want you to put fingers in Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, and Ephesians 4. I've turned mine down so I can get among these with ease. Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, and Ephesians 4. And from these three, and let's just very briefly, we don't have the time to do much more, let's very briefly look at what he says. Look at Romans 12, for example, verses 4 through 8. And we'll just kind of pick out one or two verses there that'll show you what we mean. For as in one body we have many members, and all the members do not have the same function. In fact, what he means is that none of the members have the same function. But anyway, that's what he's saying. Not everybody has the same function. So we, though many, are one body in Christ. Then look over to 1 Corinthians 12, and about verse 14 beginning, says about the same thing. For the body does not consist of one member, but many. And he goes on and says that if the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I'm not a part of the body. Well, that doesn't make it any less a part of the body. Or if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I'm not a part of the body. He said, that doesn't affect it. It doesn't make it any less a part of the body. So you find that throughout these verses here, it's talking again about the diversity. In Ephesians 4:11, it says that he's given different gifts to different people. He gave some to be apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastor teachers. Now, this is all referring to diversity. We have a diversity of talents and functions. Look at 1 Corinthians 12 and verses 4 and 5. And I want you to look at a word that's used three times. And this is the word that's emphasized in these two verses. Now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are varieties of service, but the same Lord. And there are varieties of working, but it is the same God. You see what he's, the word variety? That's a key word in the concept of the body. And back in 1 Corinthians, or on over in 1 Corinthians 12, he said, can you imagine what a mess it would be if every member of the body was the same, if the whole body were an eye? Can you imagine what that would be? How would you like to meet an eye coming down the road weighing 190 pounds? Well, that's ridiculous. Or that size nose. No, he says that's not right. We're all different. We have different talents. We have different functions. There's a diversity of personality. There are no two of us that are alike. It never ceases to amaze me how even when you have identical twins, there's something different about them. If you check them physically, one will have a mole somewhere where the other one won't. And even then, if you had everything physically just right, there's a difference in the attitude and personality. There's just something different about each one of us. There's a diversity of needs. Each has his own needs. There's a diversity of viewpoints. Some people are vegetarians, others are meat eaters. Some observe all days just alike. Others observe other days, one day above another day. And Paul says in Romans 14, you're just going to have to receive each other open-armed, just like Jesus Christ has received you, and don't receive each other for the sake of picking each other apart. That's what he says in verse 1 of chapter 14 of Romans. And one of the other differences is that some of us are visible and others of us are invisible. I don't mean that you don't have visibility, but I mean in your function in the body, some of us are very visible, others of us are invisible. Someone this morning went down to the service station and found a man, two spare tires. He had blown out two tires, got him fixed up, and put him back on the road, and he and his little baby and his wife went on back home. Nobody probably would have known a thing about that but me. I was the one that they came to. I was in the office. Terry Smith found him. He hadn't been in town more than 24 hours, and here he is again finding folks. He's forever finding somebody and bringing them home, you know. Just like a little boy bringing home puppy dogs. He does it all the time. 24 hours he was here, and here came knocking on the door and saying, I've got a man here that's two tires blown out. So we called Fred Johnson. But now that's an invisible thing. But the point is that whether you're visible or invisible, that every part of the body is essential. There are no unnecessary parts of the body. Aren't you glad that not every part of the body is visible? How would you like to have your liver hanging over here on your right ear? Just sitting over there, you know, or... Well, that would be a frightening thought, wouldn't it? I'm so glad that parts of my body are invisible. They just don't come to light. Your gizzard and all this, you know, is just not there. Not visibly. But with all this diversity, some in the Old Testament, in the New Testament days, Jews, Gentiles, They were Greeks, they were barbarians, they were free, they were slaves, they were, just name it. They had all of this diversity with different gifts, different personalities, different backgrounds, different idiosyncrasies, the whole mess. And they were all wrapped up in one big ball, brought into a body. God placed every member in there as he saw fit, so that there would be no diversity in the sense of being any division, but that the whole body might be joined together. And you know what it produces when you find that? It produces something good. Provided you realize that diversity is a part of being in the body. Now, in order for such a diverse body to function as a unit, though, you've got to see some things. First of all, you've got to see a common identity that you have. Look over at, here again, now 12, 1 Corinthians 12, 12 and 13. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many are one body, so it is with Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews and Greeks, slaves or free, and were all made to drink of one Spirit. The major word in this whole two verses is the word Spirit. We've often thought it was the word baptized. The word baptized isn't the major word here. The major word is Spirit. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews, Greeks, slaves or free, and were all made to drink of the one Spirit. The one Spirit is the key here. And he's talking about it in terms of the unity of the body. And so we find ourselves being told, you have a common origin. He says, do you want to know why you have such, why there's unity in the midst of such diversity? It's because your common origin is in the Spirit of God. It's in one Spirit that you were all baptized into one body. And you were all made to drink of the one Spirit. And so it is over in Ephesians 4. Look over again in Ephesians 4. He says there in verses 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, really verses 4 through 6 are the common foundation that he talks about. There's one body, one Spirit, one hope, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, and one God. Now, but in verse 3, he says you're eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Now, watch what two words he introduces verse 4 with. There is one body and one Spirit. Well, that's what he got through saying back over in First Corinthians 12, 12 and 13. He says you were baptized into one body. In one Spirit, you were baptized into one body. And then as he talks about it in Ephesians 4 and talks about the unity of the body, he introduces it with these two first concepts again. One body and one Spirit. That's the only way there can ever be any real, genuine unity in the midst of so much diversity, is that we as one body find ourselves in a common origin of having one Spirit. That's the only way you can do it. And that's the only way you can ever disagree without being disagreeable, if you have the common Spirit. You don't have the same Spirit with somebody, you're going to fight like cats and dogs. If you don't have the same Spirit with your wife, oh mercy, you've got problems on your hands. If you don't have the same Spirit, you've got people in one body here. If you don't have the same Spirit, you're going to have trouble, because it's a foregone conclusion. There's going to be diversity. You might as well accept it. But if you've got the same Spirit, that's all right. And once you've got the same Spirit, what? Well, you're going to have the same care for each other. That's what he mentions in 1 Corinthians 12. He says, if one member suffers, what happens? If one member suffers, we all suffer. If one member is honored, we all rejoice. Why? Because we all have the same Spirit. We all have the same mind. We're all together. You know, who was it that sang the song, He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother? It doesn't matter who's, I don't guess. Anyway, the song, He Ain't Heavy, Mister, He's My Brother. Boy, I can't even hear that without choking up. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. Boy, isn't that true? Isn't it true? And if you'll think about it, in Ephesians 5, and about verse 29, where it says, no man ever hates his own flesh, but he nourishes and cherishes it. Do you know who that was spoken of, really? Initially, Paul says, I suspect that that means Christ and the church. But he said, it talks about the man is loving his wife and taking care of his wife. But that's the secondary application. When it says the two shall become one flesh, he says that's talking really about Christ and the church. But he says, let everybody love his own wife and let the wife see that she respects her husband. But he's talking about people in the body. No member of the body ever hates another member of the body. If he's in his right mind, he doesn't. He nourishes and cherishes each other. We nourish one another and we cherish one another, because we're members of the same body. And that's what's meant in Acts 4:32. You remember we studied about how that the members were of the same heart and the same soul? That's just saying simply that they were of the one Spirit. They were baptized of the one Spirit into the body. One Spirit kept these people together. Oh, but look, in order to have this common unity, in order to have this common oneness, let me say this, there's got to be the pursuit of a common goal. You can't be going in one direction and me in another direction and us have much unity. You and your wife can't, you know, unless a house is divided, unless a house is united in the way that it goes, unless two brethren are agreed, how can they walk together? So it is with members of the church. Our common goal is expressed in Ephesians 4:13. We're trying to grow up into the fullness of Christ. That's our common goal. If we have a common identity now, a common origin, now watch, this is what produces unity. If we have a common origin and a common goal, well, that's two of the very most fundamental aspects of unity. Unity of faith and knowledge, he mentions in 4:13 of Ephesians. He says, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of Jesus Christ. That's our goal. But you know, unless all of us, unless the whole body is involved in a search for the unity and a search for the knowledge and a search for the faith, unless we're all involved in this search, there's going to develop a knowledge gap. Some members are studying, others aren't studying. Some are giving thought to how to encourage others, others aren't. There's going to be a knowledge gap develop, and you just watch it. Those that don't study keep dropping back further and further until finally they just drop out because there's this knowledge gap. They're not getting the same activity that the others. We're also aiming at the full stature of Christ, 4:13b. He says, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. And yet, if all of us are not engaged in activity, if some of us are doing all the work and others of us aren't, and others of us do very little while others do most of it, there's going to be an activity gap there. And you know, when all this happens, if there's a knowledge gap and an activity gap in the body or in the church here, then the world is going to see, and we're going to also see, that we're really not all one after all, because we're not all pursuing the same goal. Some of us have our minds on one thing, some of us have our minds on the other. But if you're in the body of Jesus Christ, there's got to be a common mind, a common search, a common goal, a common pursuit. And when that happens, unity pursues, unity results. Look, unity is not the result of perfection. If all of us have to be perfect before we become one, we never will make it. Unity is not the result of perfection. Unity is simply the result of direction. It's all it takes. If we're all headed in the right direction, if we're all headed in the same direction, we're going to be united. You're going to be at one stage of development, I'll be at another, you'll be at another. None of us is going to be at the same stage of development and perfection as the rest of us. There just won't ever be that sameness. But that's not what unity is based on. Unity isn't based on perfection. Either perfection of doctrine, of either understanding it or putting it into practice, or either perfection of morality. We're not ever going to be all just alike. But unity doesn't depend on uniformity. Unity depends on transformity. If each of us is being transformed into the likeness of Jesus Christ, regardless of whether you're up here and I'm down here, it doesn't make any difference. It will produce unity out of diversity every time. Okay. Now, this can only happen when there are common attitudes. Now watch, here's what I want you to remember for today. We've got diversity. Mercy me, we've got diversity. But as long as we have common origin, common foundation, and as long as we're pursuing a common goal, we're going to have unity. But in order for us to have a common goal and pursue it, in order for us to realize unity as a reality, we're going to have common attitudes. And those common attitudes are mentioned in Romans, the 12th chapter. Flip over there quickly as we close. Romans, the 12th chapter, mentions that. I'm just going to name them and then we'll go. Common attitudes. There are seven of them. I'm just going to point them out. Verse 3, For by the grace given to me, I bid everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment. That's humility. That's number one, as he mentions here, humility. You can't have unity where there's no humility. Where nobody's willing to back down, nobody's willing to say I was wrong. Everybody thinks that he's, you know, more important than everybody else. You'll never have unity on that basis. But when you get people who say, well, you know, I've been wrong once before. It was when I thought I was wrong and wasn't. Sometimes that's the only way people ever admit that they were wrong. But if you have a common agreement that, you know, I've been wrong before, I could be wrong again. Humility. Look at verse 9. Love, let love be genuine. Hate what's evil. Hold fast to what's good. Zeal, verse 11, never flag in zeal. Be aglow in the Spirit. Serve the Lord. Hope, verse 12a, rejoice in your hope. Verse 12b, patience. Be patient in tribulation. Verse 12c, be constant in prayer. And then verse 13, generosity. Generosity. So these common attitudes, humility, love, zeal, hope, patience, prayer, and generosity. And then the rest of Romans 12, I suspect, could be salted down among these seven attitudes that we've mentioned here that are essential to Christian unity. Now, when we, who are so diversified, and in this body, I don't know how on earth you'd get any more diversity than what we've got. But don't get discouraged over that. Don't get discouraged over somebody being different from you. Don't be discouraged about others having different talents and you having different needs. Just don't worry about it. We're just all different. Don't worry about my being visible, your being invisible, my being something, your being something else. That doesn't matter. When we who are so diversified possess these common attitudes of humility, love, zeal, hope, patience, prayer, and generosity, when we have these based upon a common goal, originating out of a common origin, we're going to have unity. And God will be glorified. And the world will see, you know what? Those people are. They're the people of God. Jesus said, Father, let them be one, that the world may know that thou hast sent me. How do you feel about your, as I said, how do you feel about that thumb next to you or the big toe sitting next to you? He's different from you. Love him. Love her. And let's make this body of Jesus Christ here a living, throbbing, thriving reality that pulsates with love, that glows with hope, that just simply is on his way home toward God. Common direction, common origin, common attitudes. In all this diversity, there will be unity. Today, may I urge you to commit yourself to that right now without reservation. And if there's anybody with whom you have such, or at odds, or you're so diverse from them that you've become divided from them, go to them. Before you eat the Lord's Supper next Lord's Day, go to that person and see to it that he and you get together. You can't eat the supper as long as you're fighting with a brother. Can't do it. Now, somebody might be here this morning and not a Christian. You might want to be a part of such a body as this. Or you may not want to be. But may I urge you, if this has discouraged you, don't look at us, look at the Lord. And then you can get in and you'll be another diversity. But that's all right, that's the way he planned it. May God bless us. Let's stand and sing together while we encourage one another.